Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
I'm coming with you to UKAC.
Will you stop doing that?
Mm-mm.
Also, nope.
Yep.
No, Sam, I'm not letting you. You can't
you
just risk everything.
I don't get to decide what I risk. No one does. I haven't done one thing that hasn't been programmed in either of my lives. That's not living, and I deserve a life.
So deserve it somewhere else.
You're about to launch a shuttle from a ship at warp while trying to synchronize your warp bubble with the Athena's, then exit the warp bubble without blowing up, which I cannot wait to see you do, because you have a 99% chance of being turned into space salsa without someone who can calculate vector harmonics faster than a computer. But it'll be no skin off my ass, because I'll blip out of here nanoseconds before the skin on yours loses cohesion and you are reduced into subatomic dust, which means you couldn't get rid of me if you tried.
Hello and
hi. Oh, should have fucked it up, didn't I? I thought I could sneak it in there.
I mean, you did.
You snuck something.
I was trying to shake it up a little this week.
And it
has been shaken.
You accomplished that mission, sir.
Yeah.
Good on you.
Good on me.
Okay. So hello.
Oh, hi.
And
hi.
Welcome.
Welcome to you.
No.
To you, sir.
Oh, we're not welcoming each other.
We're welcoming the audience.
Welcome, audience.
Those people.
What do you mean those people?
What do you mean, though?
I got to second Dan's those people. Or like, I'm not seconding Jesse's those people. I'm seconding Dan's those people.
Thank you.
Right.
Okay. Yes. Hello. Welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
What's up? Oh, hi, guys.
Hi, how's it going?
No, it's not bad.
Yeah, not bad.
Pretty good.
Yeah, so this is the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
And yeah.
We are currently on episode 331 of that podcast.
Which is interesting.
Why is it interesting?
It's not that interesting.
Were you trying to make like a Section 31 joke?
No.
Good, because it doesn't make sense. Because it's 331 and not 31.
Yeah.
I was trying to relate
it to the title. But it doesn't really relate that closely to the title.
Oh, because of the title of the episode we're discussing this week?
Yeah, but if you could relate the title of the episode with Section 31.
Not really.
Sort of. You could say the title of the episode plus Section 31 equals the number of episodes we have.
Yeah, it's not much of a joke, but...
I never said it was a joke.
But the numbers do
I just said
up.
It was a thing that exists.
Okay, so... Just to clarify.
It's a thing that exists.
This week on the It's Got Star Trek podcast, on the 331st episode of the It's Got Star Trek podcast, we will be discussing Star Trek, Starfleet Academy, Season 1, Episode 9, the penultimate episode.
Penultimate.
I said that weirdly.
You love pointing out the penultimate.
You know what I like even more, but I forgot last week?
The ultra penultimate
it's
called?
The anti-penultimate.
Not the ultra penultimate.
Anti-penultimate. I kind of like ultra penultimate, but... Anti-penultimate.
What about the pencil ultimate?
Pencil dick.
Pennsylvania.
This is the ninth episode.
Castlevania.
The first season, the penultimate episode of the first season of Starfleet Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And that episode is titled 300th Night.
Official end of our first academic year. Tonight, we all have something to celebrate.
Let's give them a show.
And that they did.
300th night.
They gave us a show with a cliffhanger and all sorts of good acting and fun stories. And it's like, what's going to happen next?
Nobody knows.
It's a good time. 300th night. And if it, If it pleases you.
It does.
As Dan noted, you can take the episode 300th night, you can add section 31 to that, and then you get 331, which is the number of this podcast.
Way ahead of you.
Good. Okay, so without further ado, we do want to get started, but we do have a couple things.
There's a bit of a do.
Couple things up front. I first wanted to get out of the way. This refers, I think this was something we mentioned last week. This is an email from Brother Rob.
Ooh.
Brother Rob.
It's been a while.
Is that your Brother Rob?
It is Dan's Brother Rob.
Shit. Oh, snap.
The subject line is Rocky Mountain Oysters.
Oh, how great.
And so in my notes, it says email from Rob about eating balls with Dan.
Nice.
So
I love to eat balls with my brother.
So
one of my brothers,
which is
great. I don't think I've ever eaten balls with my other brother.
That's something you got to rectify. Mm.
I got to rectify.
I was going to say rectify, but I didn't because I wanted to leave it to you.
Oh, thanks, man.
Well, especially since incest was involved. So.
Yeah, of course.
Not, maybe not incest, but
well,
implied incest.
Thanks, Jay.
We're very open-minded here. So, Rob.
Yeah, me too.
Rob says, I was there when my brother Dan ate balls in Colorado.
Yep.
In fact, we ate balls together.
Yep.
They were delicious.
Mm-hmm, delicious balls.
And this is getting to what Jesse had some questions about, some of the details about the balls.
It was amazing.
So Rob goes on to say, I remember the Rocky Mountain oysters being breaded kind of like mozzarella sticks.
Yeah.
With a similar breading and served with marinara sauce, just like mozzarella sticks.
Right. Yeah.
Except, that's of course, they were calf testicles and not cheese.
Well.
Dan is right. They were quite flat and chewy. Mm-hmm. Our tasty gonad appetizer was followed by steak, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. I don't recall the quality of the steak, though. I do remember the taste of those balls.
Yeah.
Sure. Ah, memories.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an email from Dan's brother, Rob. Thank you, Rob. Thanks. I can't believe you have to.
Thanks, Agamus.
He was so distracted.
I know.
That it was his brother that he forgot to
I was thinking him. So much about balls that I forgot to play.
I guess if you eat balls, you just always remember when you eat balls.
Yeah.
You always remember what it tastes like. It's just a memorable experience.
Yeah, but like I said, I wish they were thicker and not pounded out flat because then I would have gotten a better nut texture.
It was more like a patty of balls.
Yeah.
Well, that's a design flaw.
Lots of great quotes in this episode. I'm glad you got that one. I figured you would. I
love the look on her, the pause and the look
on
her.
The pause was the best.
The pause is her just trying to like work it out in her mind, like how she's going to reconcile this, like everything that's going on right now. Like her just trying to like, the moment that those two cadets appear, like Reno's like, oh, hey. And like, and Ake is just trying to like figure out what the fuck is going on and how
completely
to like
flummoxed.
Make all this work. And she's like, fuck this, you know?
Look, we've been treated to...
She's trying to keep her cool, like all that shit.
We've been treated to some excellent acting throughout the whole season, but this episode was really an opportunity to showcase not only some brilliant acting from all the people, but especially Tatiana Maslany, who's always great. Mm-hmm. So we finally get to see her again. But also this range, because there's a lot of serious stuff, but what I've been so enjoying about Starfleet Academy that's really harkens back to the old TNG DS9 Voyager days is balancing the serious shit with some goofy shit, too. Mm-hmm. Having enough, like that line from Captain Ake, which is great. Yeah. But before we...
Well, that's a design flaw.
Before we get along...
Before we get along, I'm sorry. I just realized I have to point out that I had completely forgotten that we ate steak afterwards. As far as my...
Oh, this is about the balls.
Yeah, I'm still stuck on the balls.
I never heard that part of the story.
Yeah, because I completely forgot about it. Like, I'm... Like,
well, presumably you had eaten something because it's an appetizer.
I
right?
know.
The balls
and
are
that's,
an appetizer.
And
they're
that's,
not the main course.
Right. No, and that's an excellent point.
It's
like,
the foreplay.
Like, even without remembering what else I ate, I should have at least known that the implication was that I ate something else. But all I remember from that story was that we ate Rocky Mountain oysters and the rest of it is just gone. Like, my mind didn't even consider that there was a meal after that, even though that's what makes perfect sense.
What kind of steak was it?
I don't remember that.
No,
we
recollection.
I have
was
no
it tube steak.
Oh, that's what he was doing.
Okay.
I'd be pissed if I weren't a master at compartmentalization.
I compartmentalized those balls as being the only event that happened at that restaurant. Much so that my mind didn't even use logic to say, hey, you probably ate something else.
Mm-hmm. You got to eat more balls and then it won't be so special in your mind anymore.
Yeah.
It won't occupy such a revered and lonesome place in your mind palace.
Steak. I wonder what steak. I bet we ate ribeye or something because I know both Rob and I Love some ribeye.
You're all about the ribeye.
I don't know what Alex likes for steak.
Well, something you can sort out with him. Maybe we'll get some more information.
It doesn't matter.
I mean, clearly Rob
doesn't matter.
Rob doesn't remember either. What I was attempting to get at is before we get too far along in our conversation.
Yes.
Is we need to check with you, Dan. Do we have or which special Dan's bits do we have this week? In terms of, you know, duty or no duties, and that's in orders, and other bugaboos, and lists.
No, I actually came up with a list of topics to discuss in case we run into each other.
A list of topics to discuss in case we run into each other.
And here we are.
Cute little scene there between Caleb and Tarina.
There's really no lists, and there's no duty or duty duties, but there is finally, after months and months of silence, there was a that's an order this episode.
Uh-huh.
I didn't actually record it because I never record those, but like I did quote it.
All right. Well, I'll put it down in my notes. We're not going to reveal that's an order. And again,
it's amazing because we haven't had one in so long.
For new audience members, this is a thing that Dan pays attention to. It's that classic trope of somebody saying, you know, that's an order. You do this, that's an order. Often be when they're about to sacrifice themselves or something like that. And Dan likes to call these out and adjudicate whether or not it is an appropriate use of that's an order, or if it's a lazy falling back on a literary crutch type of version. So we'll find that out later in today's show. So that's
this is a flex! This is it!
That's something to look forward to.
This is it!
Couple other things.
Can't really hear. That was supposed to be Anakin Skywalker.
Was it?
Can you put this is it?
There's too much background
noise.
What
does he say? What is he saying?
It's supposed to be the part where he's like, this is tense.
That damn John Williams.
But it's like so much background
noise. Which movie is that from? Is that from Phantom Menace?
Yeah.
The Falcon Menace. That'd be a much better movie, probably.
Chief O'Brien!
Sounds better already.
A few other things to look forward to is that we, of course, will have, go over this week and next week's Where the Hell Have I Heard That Before?
Are you kidding me?
Got some great guesses.
I don't think he's kidding.
Got some great guesses for last week's entry in Where the Hell Have I Heard That Before? And I think we've got a good one for next week. So hope people can look forward to that. And in the second break, I did want to try a new thing that I'm calling video spiel identify 'em ups.
What?
Well, you'll see. You'll see. It's probably going to completely fail, and it's definitely going to annoy people, but I figured, you know what? Give it a try. It's the penultimate episode. Next week, we're going to have so much stuff to discuss because it's the season finale, but, you know, we'll try to have a little bit of fun this week. So,
okay, let's do it!
Perfect timing, because I think that is all the front matter this week. We're good to go. We're ready to start this conversation.
Only 11 minutes in.
Yeah, and
I'm wearing my jacket. Do I normally wear my jacket during these things?
Are you cold?
I don't know. I just Jesse says I'm normally wearing my jacket.
In
I don't
winter,
think
in the winter times you tend to wear your jacket.
Do you? So this is something you've actually observed.
Yeah. I think sometimes you wear your jacket, sometimes you take it off. It's a little chilly today.
I don't tend to get that cold. Yeah. I always wear, you know, shorts into the winter.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
But another thing that I am...
That aggravated my mother.
Yeah, I remember
my mother
that.
Would be like, Dan, why are you wearing shorts? It's winter. And then you'd look at her with a straight face and say, she was like, you'll catch a cold. And you would be like, I'm building up an immunity to cold.
Yeah, right. That was my
She was like, it does not work this way.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, my mother is an immigrant, just FYI. So I'm allowed to make immigrant voice.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I'll walk outside, you know,
You cook stir fry outside? I'm sorry. How could I not make that joke?
How could he not?
You tell me, Dan, how I cannot make that joke.
What is wrong with you two?
Yeah, I'm lumped in with Jesse.
All right.
Explain yourself.
What did I do?
Sorry, Jesse. You got lumped in with Patrick on that one. So you
walk outside.
Yeah, now I can't see. Now I can't hear the word any other way than stir frying.
Okay.
No, I would often use my feet to reverse the ground outside.
Wait. Okay, I know we want to talk about this episode.
Kiss my ass.
We want to talk about this episode of Star Trek. But what you just said is very confusing.
I used my feet to traverse the ground on the outside.
To traverse the ground.
What did you think
I said?
You were
trying to avoid saying walk. I thought you said I used my feet to reverse the ground.
Whoa, I don't even know what that
means. That's what I heard, too.
I thought you were like doing that thing like horses do where they're all like, and they like kind of, you know.
I thought you were inventing
the ground behind them.
New way to speak.
What was that lower? Wasn't it a Lower Decks episode where like they didn't travel? So in the normal universe, they had warp drive and they could travel mm-hmm. far distances. But there was another dimension mm-hmm. where they didn't travel distances. They just traveled to different like dimensions. Yeah.
That was
stuff.
At the end of last season, actually.
Yeah. So that's what reversing. Maybe that's what we're reversing. You'd have to be able to do that in order to reverse the ground.
Yeah, flip it and reverse it. So speaking of,
where do you get this flip it and reverse it from?
That's a lyric.
Missy Elliott?
From an old tune, you know. Uh-huh. Is my flipper never yet wet yet?
Oh.
And my flipper never yet wet. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's got like a little thing going on. Okay, yeah. Anyway. So you are
brilliant.
You're stir frying.
You were always brilliant.
You're stir frying outside. What?
Okay.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about.
Is this an anecdote?
It's supposed to be.
Okay.
But right. I think it's failing.
All right. No, it's a relatable anecdote.
So I always
endear you to our audience.
So you're talking about, you were talking about me wearing a jacket, and Jesse was like, you wear a jacket. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Patrick was like, maybe he's cold. And I was like, I don't get that cold. So I wear shorts in the winter often. And I will often walk out.
Previously on this episode of It's Got Star Trek.
Yeah, right.
I'm so full of shit.
I would traverse the ground outside without shoes on or socks. I do that often. Yeah. Like if I'm running out,
I think it's good for your feet, isn't it?
And like I often run outside in the snow barefooted just to, you know, just to
feel alive,
just to get something or feel alive or whatever. But that is actually something Rob does as well. He will do that as well. So we
I'm
both have that.
Pro barefoot. I'm often barefoot. I subscribe to the idea. I don't know if it's fully backed by science or whatnots, but I subscribe to the idea that probably foot health is aided by a healthy amount of barefoot walking, particularly over ground, dirt, grass, sand. I get the impression that I'm not like one of these naturalistic fallacy people. I just think that is probably good for the foot muscles and the ankle muscles and stuff.
Plus,
like
it
that.
Builds up like a calluses, yeah. So you can, I mean, toughens them up.
You don't want to do it like all the time if it's mm-hmm. not an appropriate situation. Like I'm not going to like necessarily go hiking.
But the problem is when you build up like those intense calluses on the corners of your toes, yeah. Sometimes can get a little annoying.
But then you just get them little fish to eat them off. You put your fish, your feet in the tank, and then those little fish.
Are you talking about
them.
Piranhas?
No.
There's a callus on my toe, and it like grows. I have to like file it down.
Yeah.
Ah, like, oh, damn.
Like getting like a second fucking toe or something. Yeah.
You're talking about filing your toes?
Yeah. Or you can clip it off.
Sand it, you know, like with some like.
I think this podcast is getting into some dangerous territory.
You started.
Talking about sanding our toes?
Okay. Did this anecdote
do we have any like warts or anything we want to talk about? Like
not particularly.
Bunions.
Bunions. Yeah, let's talk about bunions.
No,
people want to hear about that.
Fundle toes. I don't have any fundle toes.
I keep it clean, man.
Mayday. Mayday.
All right. Thank you for that anecdote, Dan. Now people know you like doing barefoot stuff. So
takes years of practice and it's very rewarding.
No. So great. This episode, another thing they've been doing this season is fun openings, right? We've called out all the various, like when they did the opening in Klingon, or they did the opening Sam style, all goofy fun style. Yeah. Here's another one
with
where
crowns.
Like,
when they had the drawings with the crowns.
Yes. And in this episode, it's all like, you know, the 300th night, end of the year party, blah, blah. Mm. It looks fun. They really do a good job of making it seem like these people are having a good time.
Nobody commented on the fact that I said crown instead of crayon. I thought
I was wondering
say,
if you were trying to say crayon, but you were saying it funny.
I mean, I assumed you were saying crayon.
And I wasn't really sure what was going on.
I didn't want to make a big deal about
you,
it.
You thought you might be making fun of the way I talk or something?
No.
I was just going with the flow.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah. It was my bad.
Yeah.
What do you mean by this?
But
I don't even know.
Clown prince. Now, quick question. Does he say crown prince or clown prince?
Or crayon.
That's one of them rapid callbacks.
Yeah, that was pretty good, Jesse.
That was clever.
I mean, you guys
offer, because I don't see the captions, because I don't know how to read, but you guys like the captions, right? You guys are all about the captions.
I often have.
Did you happen to notice? Did it say clown prince or crown prince? Dan's looking it up in his. Dan's got some.
I don't remember.
Some secret sources. They're not that secret.
Jesse, what do you think it is?
Can I hear it? I don't remember the line.
Okay.
Clown prince.
What do you think it is?
It sounds like he said clown.
To me, it sounds like he says clown, but I don't know. I mean, clown prince is a better line than crown.
That's what I'd put my money on. We still use money.
Okay, so I think Dan is using that clip of Jet Reno to convey to us that he has looked at the script.
Yes.
And it did indeed. Am I correct, Dan? It did indeed say Clown Prince.
Yep.
Okay.
All yeah. right.
Speaking of which, that was a little Jet Reno joke, wasn't it?
Yeah.
When she said, there's transwarp tunnels throughout that sector. That's what I'd put my money on if we still used money. Yeah. That was a Reno joke. Yeah. There was one more joke in this episode. Totally. Did you catch the other joke in this episode?
Oh, just the one other joke?
Just that one?
There was just one other joke.
The Jet Reno joke, and there was one other joke in this episode.
There was one other. It was like one other meta joke.
Okay. What was the other meta joke?
Aki and Kelrek are talking. Kelrek says, why so many ships for the Eridani system? And Aki says, Navar. And Kelrek says, I can't believe I forgot they rejoined. And Aki says, I can't believe I forgot they're not called Vulcan anymore. Yeah. I think that's a joke.
It was like audience. It was like captain's
humor. It was like audience. Did you remember? Yeah. Right. In case you forgot, you know, here's a reminder in joke form.
Yeah, I dig that.
Yeah.
And also a reminder that the Eridani.
Navar Burton. That's funny. Jesse, you're on fire tonight.
The Eridani system, was that what Eridani system?
Yeah. I think it's an Epsilon Eridani.
It's not important.
That is a real star system, and I think some people online were confused, but that's been listed as the home of Vulcan since I think TOS. I'm pretty sure TOS
that's
was
old
like
school,
I think people sometimes forget that Star Trek makes up a lot of planet names and all sorts of stuff, but a lot of the stars, like Wolf 359,
they're real stars.
That's a real star. Yeah. You know, like a lot of the things they
put. It's
supposed
to be our real galaxy.
Exactly, right? So that was fun. Okay, so I think first thing to note is that this was directed by Jonathan Frakes.
Yes.
Only episode he directed this season. I think it's an extremely well-directed episode, which is not surprising. Usually Frakes' episodes are fun, but I think...
Was he responsible for Admiral Vance's bushy old beard this episode?
Well, he's had a bushy beard the last couple episodes.
I don't think it was as bushy as it was this episode.
It seems like it's getting a little
bushy.
Maybe,
but they made a point to give him the beard, I think, to stress the time had passed. Because remember,
He seemed particularly...
Like a lot of time
had passed. He seemed particularly fuzzy all around his head and face region.
Maybe he's got a Talaxian butthole fly.
Fur fly thing is getting a little overbearing.
I love it. I love the fur fly shit.
It's getting be a little much for me.
I wonder what it'll be next season. I hope they do something similar. But yeah, Jonathan Frakes directed this, and we can make a few comments along the way. But I think really,
Judgy Genesis.
Another one of my favorite lines. Yeah. As well as the line that comes later, which you probably have. I know we're jumping around here a little bit, but when he's all like, it's all over my trousers.
Yeah.
I actually don't have
Red
that.
Is glitter puke.
I do have
glitter bomb.
I do have, which he does vomit glitter.
That was a whole debate we had.
That was a debate, and I was wrong. So I'm admitting it.
There we go.
Now I didn't get.
He's like my trousers.
I didn't get that, but I did get this. I remember hearing one a long time ago that, and I can't verify the accuracy of this statement, but I heard it on some radio show, and they said studies show that upsetting sounds to people are someone vomiting and babies crying. Yeah. That's what that according to this. It might have been Don and Mike or something like that saying.
Babies
but like
bad.
The sound of vomit is like upsetting for people, and babies crying is like really upsetting.
Don and
for
Mike
people.
Was a drive time comedy radio show.
Comedy pyramid.
In the late 90s and early 2000s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don Geronimo and Mike O'Mara.
Don Geronimo's real name was Mike Source.
Yep.
Mike O'Mara's real name was Mike O'Mara.
Yep.
Yeah.
wasn't it like early 90s too?
Well, they had a show since the 80s, but then they became more of like a talk show.
Shock jockey.
Shock
jock, something that could only exist in the 90s.
94, 93.
You can't exist anymore.
Yeah. You can't shock people anymore.
Yeah, you can't do that on Nintendo.
Genesis done.
16-bit arcade graphics.
Perfect. Okay.
You can't do this on Nintendo.
So
it's just a crazy idea.
I don't think we're getting anything done this episode.
No, we are. We're getting all sorts of done.
We're way into it.
We should after this. We should like splice it and put it in the correct order after we do this because we're all over the place. And I'm not blaming anyone but myself. So
we'll do. How about this, Dan? How about because that takes a little extra work. So what we'll do?
There's no one else to blame but you.
Like this will be what goes out to the general public, and then on the Patreon we'll have the good versions of the episode where we cut it together to sound like it makes sense.
So sassy.
All right.
Klingon ritual. This is cute.
Drinking blood, right?
Hey, there was a notable person missing from this Klingon ritual.
Right. Where's that dude?
Which dude?
Kyle.
There you go. Bing, bang.
Oh, yeah.
Cadet Kyle.
And did you notice how eager Darren was? He was super excited and delighted to be part of this ceremony because Darren, I think he enjoys.
I think so.
He likes.
Winky, winky.
Yeah, people complained about the lack of Kyle. But Kyle's not joining the family because he's just a little twink fuck toy.
Oh,
which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. That's awesome. It's just not the same as your family.
He's War College and they're like Starfleet.
Not to him!
Darum's super into it. They're all super into it, except for Caleb. And of course...
Yeah, why does Caleb have to be such a grumble bumble?
Well,
about
because
it?
We understand that Caleb is now being asked. Yeah. Like, they don't... The friends and...
Yeah, look, I understand that, like, he doesn't want to get too close to them. He's thinking about his mom and all this. Like, okay, wait.
So you do understand.
No, okay. But look.
So you seem to understand precisely why he's uncomfortable with it.
Hush.
You want to die?
What I'm saying.
Okay.
First of all, now is he resisting because he doesn't want to get too close to him because he thinks he's going to leave soon, or do you think? Feels like he's betraying his mom by getting too close to him?
In my view, it's a little bit more the latter, and I think it also caught him a little off guard because when he's saying like we're respecting our families, but we're creating this newfound family, and everyone else thinks that's all sweet. I think Caleb never before really thought of it in that way, and the look on his face is like. Oh, it was a sudden clash with his like, but my whole deal is that I'm looking for my mom and I want to get out of here.
He's
wanting to find my mom.
But by not drinking it, he's making more of a statement than if he had drank it. If he drank it, it would have just been like status quo.
But by not
drinking it, he's making a big deal out of something that didn't have to be a big deal.
Yeah,
but I think...
Which is why I was saying, why did he have to be such a grumple bump?
Because I think he doesn't want to dishonor the ritual.
He doesn't want to diss the ritual.
Yes. I think he, in his mind, because I think I would be in the same boat, which is like, I can respect something and not want to participate in it. And so I can understand the kind of discomfort of being like, I totally don't want to like rag on your thing, but if I lie about it, if I participate falsely, that kind of like feels like I'm like doing something wrong. Like even if I don't believe in that shit, I still feel like I'm like it's offensive. Now, the thing is it depends. There's sometimes where you're like, oh yeah, no, I'm just going along to get, I'm enjoying learning about this culture or whatever. But this was like so serious to Jaden, right? He was, he was like a serious vibe, like end of school year. We're best buddies. We form this tight knit group and we're going to do like the Blood Brothers thing. I think that was what was getting like,
was that
Caleb
the
a little
only
skeeved
part
out
of the ritual or do they eat worms afterwards?
I don't know.
Is it just drinking blood?
Well, cause they've done this ritual before. This is not new to this show.
Apparently there was booze in there.
Worf.
Well, it's like blood wine.
Worf did it on TNG. There was that one episode.
Did Worf call it?
Vorushtai.
Did he call it that?
Yeah, it was called the same thing. And I think, I can't remember if he did it again on Deep Space Nine, joining Martok's house, or if it was when his brother, maybe when Kern. I can't remember, but there's at least one or two or three times that this specific ritual was either performed or brought up before. So another.
Did somebody say sassy?
Another nice thing to connect to. But it's a good scene setting because you're showing the friends getting closer, but you're also introducing this idea of there's some friction in Caleb's mind, which of course, as the episode goes along, this will become more significant. Caleb runs away.
I want to spell that out for you real quick.
Do you?
I want to.
Okay. Jesse, mark down that he said real quick.
Real.
Okay. You ready?
Yeah, we're ready.
Are you ready for me to spell this out?
Yes.
Okay. Capital S, lower O, upper S.
Lowercase O?
I'm gonna say upper S, lower O, upper S. Yes. Jesse, please.
Sorry.
Okay, I'm gonna start over.
No.
Upper S, lower O, upper S, space, lower J, lower L, upper H, space lower B, lower A, lower T, lower L, lower H, space upper A, S, lower O, upper H.
Shush, Jeff.
Would you mind?
And I almost said, ace. That Veronica Vaughn is one piece of ace.
Can you do me a favor?
I know from experience, dude.
Can you read it through real quick once, just without the uppers and lowers? We understand the summer upper and lower. Let's not worry.
I just
did not understand it because the upper and lower thing confused me. So,
but I think it's. I will do this, but okay. I think that's important to note because there are so many weird. Why are there so many uppers and lowers? Because
it's Klingon.
Okay. S O S space J L A. H space B A T L H space S O H.
But there weren't any apostrophes. It was just three words.
That's also very notable. One apostrophe.
But I'll tell you this.
House Grah.
I'll tell you this.
What do you tell me, Patrick?
Can you spell that again real quick? Just the letters.
S O S space J L H space B A T L H space S O H.
Make a hell of a sandwich. All right, we got to take a break.
Speak the words. Shush, jeer, but shush.
We got to take a break. That was a BLT.
Explain yourselves.
BLT joke. BLT.
Yeah, that was that.
When we get back, we'll have some video spiel, identify them ups, and then more conversation, more discussion, and all sorts of other fun stuff. So, look forward to that. We'll be right back.
This isn't over. I'll stop.
And we're back!
Locking on.
Everybody good?
Yeah, we're good.
I'm good.
Sam's character has
shifted.
Yeah. Grown. Yeah. Character growth.
Yeah.
Character. She's like actually 17 now.
Yeah. Sure, character is grown. Growth. Character growth. Developed.
Developed.
That's the word I was looking for.
That's what it's
character
called.
Character development.
I mean, character growth works too. The character grown was kind of funny.
Yeah. Okay.
I was imagining the same thing.
A comic, like a family circus comic, which is like one panel, There's Sam drawn in that style, and then the bubble is just her going like, because it's character grown.
Wasn't my idea.
Walk this way, BLT.
The term character development is the one that's more often used.
Yes.
Right. They don't usually talk about character growth. They usually talk about character development.
But it's the same.
Now, granted, the growth was sudden. It happened over the course of 17 years. It happened in the blink of an eye for us.
Yeah. Blink of an eye! That's an episode of Star Trek Voyager. We covered that in episode 31 of It's Got Star Trek.
Last weekend. But you can tell she's totally different now because now she's her character now more. If you notice, she's more of like she has more like a more sort of grasp over her abilities and what she has, what she can do.
Yeah.
You can tell she's more competent now with like
confident, I think. Not fully confident, but she knows
more,
herself.
She's more competent. Right. She's more competent now with like her photonic abilities because you notice in this episode, she does a lot of like zapping around like a digi fairy.
Yeah.
Like she's like a digi fairy that appears out of nowhere.
The whole episode.
Yeah. She's like that fairy
in the Ocarina of Time.
Yeah. Like she'll just
Navi.
Oh my god. She'll just like and then she does a lot with Kate. She tends to like sort of like she's one thing that's always been common with her is she's always been a character that sort of knows how to connect with people.
Yes.
And she knows, and then one of the things, she's feeling all down on herself this episode because she feels like ashamed of herself and like she thought she was, you know, kind of sad and silly and all this stuff. But she has always had this great ability to connect before and after. Now she's much more calm and sort of, you know, focused now. And like I said, with her abilities now, now that when she connects with someone, like it was Caleb this episode, she kind of just kept appearing where he was, you know?
Yeah, right.
And so it
you said the word now a lot there.
I'm sorry.
It's not a problem.
Well, he's talking now, man.
I'm just pointing it out. Next week, you're going to be like, hey, Patrick, I want you to call me out if I say now. So I'm going to call you out now for that.
No.
Sorry, that was
no call pun, you out right no, now, bitch.
No pun intended.
So point is, is that...
Yes.
What is my point?
I have no idea.
Well,
has developed.
Okay, look,
it's great. It's interesting.
She has her role is more focused now.
And again,
she's not like whereas before she was kind of all over the place. Now she's sort of like has sort of come to terms with like her abilities. You know, she's she.
I like your term focused. I think focus is, because that's, I was trying to put my own word on it. I couldn't think of anything, but I think that is pretty good at encapsulating what's happened. Is you can see it in her facial expression. And I think that's what's the brilliance of, again, all the actors on the show, and I've got some comments about some of the other ones later on, but all the actors are doing such a wonderful job, especially with their facial performances, because you, even last episode, as soon as she's gone through that 17 years of aging, she looks different. She carries herself different. I hadn't even thought about it, Dan, but you're right. In this episode, she's so easily flitting about.
Yeah.
She's not trying to pretend to be a regular humanoid. She is herself.
So instead of just sort of randomly bouncing everywhere, she's still bouncing everywhere, but it has much more purpose to it, basically.
Yeah. I dig that.
Because she's had practice bouncing around for 17 years.
Probably. Yeah,
and she got to play games when she was six, unlike Caleb, who had to struggle for food.
Yep. That's
all right.
A bummer.
But before we go too far, I did want to do this little game real quick.
The Genesis used to be kind of like her protector kind of thing. And
Genesis
now,
Live.
Yes, Genesis Live, exactly. And now... The thing that the tension here is that Genesis still treats her as her protector and kind of forgetting that she's lived 17 years since she last saw her. And Sam is a little bit starting to feel that Sam is a little resentful.
And
I
think this is one of those things where I think Genesis definitely needed to.
You mean Genesis Live?
Yes, Genesis Live definitely needed to hear this and no spoilers, but this plot line continues into the next episode. Uh-oh. So I agree there, but I also think this is a learning experience for Sam, because I think what she's told multiple times, particularly like Caleb tells her in this episode, you know, you don't have to be like sad about your previous self. Your previous self was awesome. It's different, but it was awesome. You're great. And
it's funny because all of her newfound smarts makes her feel stupid.
Yes.
You know, because she's the smarter she is now, it makes her retroactively feel stupid.
Which, by the way, again, which I really appreciate that the writers have been able to pull this off, is using crazy sci-fi characters that have all sorts of weird lifespans and personalities and origins, and yet telling something relatable, because her version of it is different, but it is totally relatable for somebody to look back to when they were a kid or in high school or college or something and be embarrassed about the person they were. So she has a very
unique scenario
yes.
of she's, at least we can be like, oh, we were dumb kids. Yes. She's, and which is what Caleb was trying to tell her, not in that those words, but he was like, you were less than a year old.
Yeah.
But she looks at it in terms of the context with her, with other teenagers approaching adulthood, basically.
And I think it's a perfect use of sci-fi, using a sci-fi scenario to create the exaggerated version of a normal thing that people deal with. Mm-hmm. So she has the extreme exaggerated, like she was actually a different program, and now she's created this, you know, and they
yeah. brought it. Whereas, it's a relatable scenario put in like a configuration that we have not really approached before.
So I really have been enjoying her character. I think it's a standout character out of a whole bunch of standout characters in this whole season.
All right. Yep.
So, real quick, I just want
to take about 14 hours.
Give this a try. I think everyone's going to hate this, but I did want to give it a try.
Is this a new game?
It's an activity. Let's not call
it's
it a game.
Activity. It's a game puts too much activity. Pressure on it.
Game would be fun.
An activity has less criteria, fewer criteria.
By manner of
notice, I corrected myself from less to fewer.
Brilliant.
Brilliant. Well done, sir.
You are brilliant.
This is something for
you
both.
You were the always brilliant.
This is something for both Dan and Jesse. It's also for the audience at home. It's a little biased towards Dan on accident, just because this is a video game focused thing. And Dan is like, for people who don't know, he's like a scholar of video games. he'll scoff at that a little bit, but he knows the deal.
That's no joke.
Dan like not only had all the Nintendo games, he had like the Bible games.
Oh yeah.
And it wasn't just that he had them on the shelf. Oh. You could ask him, he'd be like, oh yeah, I beat that, it sucked.
He had like
if only I could
multiple copies of several games.
If only I could like parlay that into some kind of profitable venture, but I don't know.
Maybe like a YouTube channel.
You could write a book.
There's so many YouTube channels about video games.
Not a Dan YouTube channel.
It's less about knowing about video games and more having an interesting spin on it.
Yeah. So. Well, we'll work on that. No. Okay, so let's give this a try. Now, you might recognize this. I played this. We played this
you
once before.
Gonna draw a lot of heat.
I found this old file. And this was, I think, years ago on the podcast, Dan, at one point you did some like video game news or something.
It can't be that bad.
So I found some like arcade ambiance file. Mm. And at the time I played it because it was funny and it was all arcadey. And
funny as hell.
It kind of aggravated you because you were trying to get through your point and it was too distracting.
This is when I was reviewing the pinball game.
Yeah, you know what? That's right. We got like a pin.
You completely sabotage my whole
sabotage. Sabotage. Do you have the courage?
Sabotage.
There you go. All right.
Sabotage.
When you sabotage my pinball review,
I wasn't meant to sabotage. I was meant to aid it
by playing the background sounds progressively louder, forcing me to talk louder.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
That part.
I did forget. I started it pretty low, and I did.
You did
sneakily put it up, and
wasn't that sneaky?
Well, it wasn't that sneaky. Obvious. I couldn't get one past you. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Diamond Ears Dan, as they call him.
Villan is on.
Anyway, I was listening to it, and I was like, you know what? There's actually some interesting, like, real games buried under the cacophony, and I'm interested in you guys playing some of this and you guys trying to call out. I just want to play that, and you just call out if you recognize a game, a sound from a game. You might get some of them, Jesse. I think Dan's definitely going to
get some of this
pressure on me.
I'm not trying to put pressure on you. You'll see. Let me just play.
He's going to get you.
Let me just play it. We'll just do this for a little bit. We'll see how this is. This will be fun. Or annoying. Everyone's going to play it.
Humble Shitter Bull Center. All
right. You recognize something, just shout it out.
Definitely Galaga.
No, that's the run. That's Sinistar. Is it a bunch of things at once?
Yeah, but it changes over time.
Yeah, there's definitely Sinistar.
There's Pac-Man. I just heard some Pac-Man eating noises.
Galaga, Pac-Man, Sinistar.
Burger time.
Oh. Yeah.
Sound like asteroids?
It might be asteroids. I don't know. I don't have the answer.
I keep hearing there's a bunch of silly stuff.
Run, run, run. There's
definitely a lot of Galaga.
Yeah, totally.
There was a car
pole position or something?
Yeah, there's like a car brake noise. Like tires screeching.
That gunfire sounds familiar. Is that Contra?
Double dribble. Is that some pro wrestling in there?
I'm going crazy.
I know, right? It's crazy.
This is really cool. It sounds really cool. I don't recognize a lot of this stuff.
They're starting to loop a lot of things.
Yeah.
It's like this awesome sort of tapestry.
It's like layering on.
I think they're just repeating stuff at this point.
Yeah.
It's been the whole time it's been repeating.
Yeah, they just layer a few things in here and there.
Can you stop doing that? This has been quite a podcast.
I think you got a lot of them.
There was one tune that I recognized, but it was like da 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 da.
Yes.
And I can't remember what fucking game that's from.
I fucking know what that is. What is that? God, what is that?
Paper Boy.
No, you're thinking of Nintendo games.
This is
all Atari.
I think this is all.
No, this is all like arcade games.
Yeah.
So I don't think it was Asteroids. It was like a lot of Galaga.
But they did have an Asteroids in their arcade.
Did they? Yeah, they did.
Yeah. Typically.
And what's the Sinistar? Is that the name of the game with
Sinistar.
Run? Do you still have those sound clips? Don't you have those sound clips, Dan?
Beware, I live. I am Sinistar.
I hunger.
Run, coward. Run. Beware, coward.
scariest fucking game I ever played.
Oh my God. That Run was definitely
Sinistar was part of that whole genre of game where you'd be playing a game, but all the while there's this monster that would appear this lurking monster that would appear out of nowhere. The other games that did that was Silent Hill is another game where you'd just be playing the game and this thing would come out of nowhere and fuck your shit up. There was a Dynasty Warriors game where you'd like be killing a bunch of people and then this dude would come up on his horse.
I thought it was a Dynasty game like the primetime soap opera.
And this dude on a horse would come and just fuck you up. It's just a game, these games where you're just having a normal game playing session, but you have to be wary of the super monster that lurks somewhere in the level that might appear where you are
and start cheating.
Friday the 13th on Nintendo.
That fucking game.
Where like Jason would just, you'd be like wandering through the camp looking for items and then every once in a while Jason would come and fuck your shit up. Jaws on
Nintendo. My cousin played that Friday the 13th game and like they ran out of the house or something.
Yeah. Jaws on Nintendo was also like every once in a while you'd like be on your boat getting shit and then Jaws would appear and fuck your world up.
Right.
Like there's a whole genre of games where they just like, it's like super monster that you can't beat like peers out of nowhere.
Silent Service.
Yeah. No, I don't think Silent Service had that. Silent Service was just a lot of sitting around like crunching numbers.
All right. Anyway, that was fun.
Doodle-doo-doo.
Fun little video game. By the by, a lot. I unfortunately wasn't able to grab clips or note things down in any kind of useful way, but I'm still going to mention it. This episode
is brought to you by
the Fresca check did not go through. this episode, the music. Okay, the music has been great all season. Not the theme song. The theme song is stupid, but all the actual music for the episodes has been really great. But I noticed that in this episode, there's I think more harkening back to prime Star Trek.
Yes.
And, right, like themes and hints, and not like exactly, but things, a lot of stuff from the movies.
So at the end, right when the Athena picks him up and Sam goes,
"That bitch is a flex!"
It sounded like out of a Star Trek movie.
Yes.
The music sounded like movie. Like music. I wanted to grab that sound, but there was too much other noise going on to make it, it didn't really stand out
maybe
enough.
The soundtrack will come out eventually, but I
but
really,
yeah that I, it sounded it. I was thinking the exact same thing that it sounded like Star Trek movie at that part.
Totally movie. All right, so rewinding back a bit,
it's not important.
Caleb
it doesn't matter,
runs away from his friend group.
It doesn't matter,
and he goes to the cool turbo lift, which again a reminder, these turbo lifts are awesome because they have comfy chairs.
Oh right, they have a whole couch system. And
you can sit if you want.
Like, I swear in Discovery, they just transport it everywhere, but whatever. Yeah. And it doesn't seem like, how long are you going to sit in a fucking turbo lift? Like, those things are pretty
long
fast.
Enough to have a conversation.
Long enough to need a fucking comfy couch to lay down in?
How big is this ship?
Well, we'll get an example. This is first example of...
I think it's a little much.
Of a nice touch by Johnny Boy Frakes.
I'll give you a nice touch.
This conversation between Tarima and Caleb is really nicely framed initially, where there's this bright light right between them, like dividing them.
Yeah, that was
right?
wild.
And then we see the same trick later on in the episode in Ake's office when she's telling Admiral Vance about Caleb running off. There's also like this same like exact same kind of feature of like a line going through the middle of the office and of the screen that's showing the division between the people who are having a conversation. So anyway, I thought that was a nice touch.
The one thing in that the conversation between Tarima and Caleb, they were talking about how awkward it was, and Tarima was all like, "Well, you know, we have seen each other naked, and I have like killed a bunch of people with my mind. It's kind of awkward." You know, I always thought that seeing each other naked was no big deal for a Betazoid. Like they see each other naked all the time, and in fact, Starfleet people see each other naked all the time. Lower
they
decks,
take the showers.
They take the showers together. But like even putting aside the lower decks thing, like for a Betazoid, everyone sees each other naked all the time.
Right, there's that.
It's no big deal. In TNG, they took a mud bath. You know, Alex and Waxana and
Alex Rozhenko and Worf and Waxana.
Is it Waxana? Waxana. Is it Waxana?
Waxana. On, walks on off.
Quacks on. Quacks on. You know, talking about
talking about this episode.
Well, Caleb was coming in and He was gonna, in that scene, he was gonna tell Ake that he was gonna go down to the planet, but well, then
I think he was gonna ask for help from
he was gonna ask for help, whatever, but like the point is he then she goes like, oh, there's a lockdown, no one goes in or out, and then he made the split the second decision to be like, I don't want to put her in this position because she wants me to help me find my parents, but she also has to follow this order, so if I tell her about this, she's gonna be conflicted because she's gonna want to help me, but she also has this order to keep, so I don't want to put her in that position, so I'm just not gonna tell her. So that was a good idea. Yeah. This happened twice with her.
Yes.
So one time Caleb does it, doesn't give her any information to try to save her, you know, from making the decision. But Vance does the same thing later, except off camera, he does the same thing. And she even knows it. So it's just kind of funny, like nobody's telling her anything so she, to like ease her mind so she doesn't have to make tough decisions.
Yeah, the Vance thing was great because she's just straight up like, he's not responding because if he did, I'd get in trouble. Yeah. Like, by not calling for me, like I can't get in trouble because I'm not like breaking the rules.
Right.
Yeah, it was fun. Now,
I can wait.
We should talk briefly about the Omega stuff. Now.
Okay, first of all, what now is Omega 47 is synthetic Omega. It just seemed like a little, like, this is definitely not a criticism at all. It's just an interesting decision by the writers to decide to use synthetic Omega instead of just using Omega.
I was interested in that. And I'm assuming the reason they did that is because when we first learn about Omega, it's in Voyager. There's an episode called the Omega Directive, which is can sometimes be controversial. Some people don't like it, but I think most people think it's kind of an awesome, interesting episode of Voyager.
The Omega Mines.
We haven't covered that one yet.
Why is it controversial?
Well, I think just... Okay, so like the very brief summary of the Omega Directive is on Voyager is we find out that there's this thing called the Omega Directive that supersedes even the Prime Directive.
Oh shit!
Yeah,
and it's and
that's right.
What we learn on that episode of Voyager. So basically, what happens is the Voyager detects an Omega particle. Nobody knows what this is, but Janeway's all like, "Oh shit!" And everyone's like, "What's
only
going
the
on? Like, what's the deal?" And it turns out there's this planet, and the planet is like basically dying, and they have no energy. And so their scientists figure out they're able to capture like a molecule of Omega, and they want to use it to power their civilization, right? Because otherwise their civilization is going to die.
Yeah.
And then what we learn in that episode is that in the 23rd century, some scientists, like Omega was this thing they figured out has all this power potential. Some Federation scientists were trying to like figure out how to make it into a power source, and it destabilized and vaporized like a whole sector, and not only killed everybody in the planets, but made it so you can't warp in that sector.
Right. So they resurrected lore that everyone decided to kill, basically.
No. Here's the like.
Well, the part about making space non-warp travelable.
Yeah.
Travelable.
No.
Travelable.
This is separate from the TNG episode that's just about warp being bad if you warp too much in an area.
So wait, are you
this
saying
this is not the same thing?
So are you saying
this is a Voyager?
So
thing.
Wait, are you saying that they killed off the lore about warp travel being bad for?
They
warp.
Never killed it off. They just didn't.
But
seem
they
to
did.
Care
well,
about
yeah,
it
but they didn't
while.
Care about. But you're saying they're still in the lore. It's still possible to make warp travel impossible on certain.
This
parts
is
of space.
A completely separate storyline. This is in Voyager, and again, let me
my question is that lore kind of also thought of as like fuck that?
Or? No, that is active lore, and it'll make more sense when I finish the summary
it's
of the episode.
It's active that we're allowed to destroy space enough that it's impossible to warp travel on.
And okay. I'll finish.
Well, I just wanted to get that clarification.
Get it. At the end of the summary of the episode, I think it'll be clear.
Space.
In the episode, it's in the 24th.
That's what we're talking about.
It's in the 24th century, but they're talking about this event that happened in the 23rd century where they tried to play with this Omega particle and it fucked everything up. So the Federation made this thing called the Omega Directive, which was if any Omega particle is ever discovered, the Federation has to destroy it.
Yep.
The Omega Mines.
And like I said, the Omega Directive is even above the Prime Directive. So even if you have to break the Prime Directive, it's the only one that lets you say you have to break the Prime Directive to destroy this Omega particle. And in the Voyager episode, what happens is you find out that, as Jesse mentioned, only captains and flag officers know about this. This is not like an everybody knows about it thing. So Janeway, that's why Janeway's all freaked out because she knows about it.
Yeah.
And the reason why the episode's a little controversial is that, again, not to spoil anything, but in the conclusion of the episode, like Janeway basically like makes it so they don't have the Omega particle to power their civilization. So the assumption is the civilization is just going to fucking die. Mm-hmm. And so it's a kind of an interesting idea about this super powerful thing.
It's one of those Janeway decisions.
It's utility. It's kind of an analogy. Maybe I think not a very good analogy for nuclear power, but it's kind of probably what it's meant to be. Yeah. So the Omega particle is something that's come up. It's not been mentioned a lot in on-screen lore, but in fandom, it's come up a lot over the years as something that they could pull out. And I think a lot of people thought
they... like books and shit?
Well, I think a lot of people thought they might do it on Discovery because, you know, like they thought maybe Discovery being in the future, you know, whatever, but it didn't happen. So but now they're using it here. So that's, again, that's where it comes from. It comes from that Voyager episode. So this is not a new thing in Star Trek. The only difference here is that whereas Star Trek used to be like, you've got to destroy Omega no matter what, Federation, right, which is all shady, was like, no, let's fucking simulate this shit because we're trying to figure shit out. And this is
synthetic Omega.
One of the themes of this episode, of this whole season, has been, look, the Federation was in a fucked up place. They were doing fucked up things. Nala Ake had to do fucked up things that she's dealing with the repercussions of. This is another example of the Federation getting rid of their old philosophy of like Omega is dangerous no matter what, to like, we're going to totally synthesize it. And it bites them in the ass because since they do that, it gets stolen. And,
never do this again.
And then Brock is able to set up his scheme.
Real quick about the, so at first Brock is laying around all these like energy field Omega set up things all over the place. And she's like confused. She's like, this isn't near anything.
And they call it a mine.
And then they
did call it a mine.
The Omega mines.
And so she's like, why are these placed about? There's nothing here. But then they discover at the end of the episode, it like zooms out. It's all fucking ominous and huge. There's this giant, like, bigger than a Dyson sphere sized diameter of and that's my question, is how are they able to lay this out at that size? That engulfed planets.
You'll be happy to know that people did the math on the internet about this.
I am happy to know that because that was fucking giant. How were they able to lay those out like that? How did they have enough energy to lay out that much fucking product?
Now, with the caveat that, you know, it's Star Trek.
It's just a little bit, whatever. Right?
It's the radius is the size of is humongous.
But the Omega is just a particle.
Each of those mines has one Omega particle, but it has a big overlapping range of where it can be set off. Right.
You have to lay that out all in a big sphere.
Exactly. The things that people were reminded about, because a lot of the Academy haters are all like, this is bullshit. But then the people did the math. They were like, first of all, everyone's like, how did he do that overnight? He didn't. It's been months since he stole the mines and the materials. He had time to place these things, right? The other thing is the Federation is a lot smaller than it was pre-Burn.
That's right.
That's like one of the main points they're trying to cobble together more, so there's less actual space.
But I'm not saying that because it's simply the Federation. You can see visibly that it engulfs several planets. It's more space than a star. Like,
it was like
huge.
80,000, I forget. It's big. But I'll send you the link. When you read through the math, I think you'll appreciate it because, if one mine has a range of like a whole star system, which it seemed to, and then you have thousands of those mines and the Federation is in a shrunken state anyway, it's perfectly reasonable to put enough of those around the Federation to be a problem.
I'm not going to start criticizing Starfleet Academy for my sort of my skepticism of this thing, because Star Trek, like, there's always something here and there in Star Trek that's like a little like, I don't know about that. But that's like that with all sci-fi. So it's not like a direct criticism on what. That's one thing that gets me, is when people decide they hate Starfleet Academy for this one little tiny thing. It's like, that's like, there's so many of those things.
You're not criticizing Starfleet Academy directly.
You're questioning the plot device.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, look, like, what I was just saying is
Jesse and I are just trying to figure out how much we should hate you.
No,
it's a spectrum.
When people, it's annoying when people like take things about one little thing about Starfleet Academy and decide to hate the whole show over it. When that kind of shit happens all the time in Star Trek.
And also, by the way, they're often wrong about it. That's the one of the funniest things. Like, we don't like to talk about the negative stuff a lot because who fucking cares about these fucking jokers? But I do find it funny that sometimes you're reading these threads on Reddit or something, and it's obvious that they didn't watch the episode, so they don't understand, and they're arguing against something that didn't even happen. And I'm not saying that's the case here, but like that's been happening a lot.
And it's little shit, like saying like Jay Den. These writers couldn't even think of like a real name, and it's funny. Yeah, we've even commented on it. It's funny that they picked the name Jay Den as his name because it's they Klingonified a real
Worf.
Name. They took a name that like that we have like a real name and like made it Klingon version, and we've commented on how that's kind of funny, but like they take that as seriously as like these writers just fucking suck. Ake, one comment I read is like, yeah, Ake walks around without shoes. It's like representative of the level of professionalism of the writers. Oh, you know, God. And it's just like people say this dumb shit, and it's like,
where do they come up
and
with
it, and
shit?
It's like it's just so blown out of proportion. Yeah, it's and silly. It's like there's shit like this all spread throughout sci-fi, but they decide to hate on Starfleet Academy specifically.
Which is why it's so easy to ignore.
So that's why I wanted clear that I'm not saying that like Starfleet Academy is bullshit because of this, but I am.
I'm just going to clip out the part where Dan says Starfleet Academy is bullshit because of this.
But I don't care if it takes months. I'm skeptical that someone can lay out
I'll send the link.
That huge of a sphere that engulfs that many places. You've convinced me.
Totally fine. I'll send you the link. There's no way to describe it on the air.
It looked at least as large as the area of a star.
Oh, no, it was way bigger. It was multiple star systems. This was hundreds of star systems.
Yeah.
It's a very big area.
It's a powerful...
It's the whole Federation. And
it's a powerful substance.
I understand if somebody says that's implausible, but that's just as implausible as God living in the middle of this fucking galactic barrier and all this other shit. I agree with you, Dan. Your point is to tell the story. But anyway...
Okay, wait.
You look at the link I will send you later, I'll put it in the show notes.
Okay, it's a good argument
for why this works.
Okay, without getting too far off track, I think the God thing at the center of the universe is unbelievable, but for a totally separate reason. Because the God in the center of the universe thing is just kind of like a magical invention.
What does God need with the center of the universe?
The God at the center of the universe is just like I shouldn't say magical invention. It's just a total invention. But this is presented as something that
medieval.
This is presented as it's the God thing is conjured. This isn't conjured. This is supposed to be something that was built. So it's slightly different. They're both. Like, I can be equally skepticized by both of them, but
yeah.
I don't believe that they're comparable because they totally have a different flavor of they're both difficult to believe in different ways.
This is another time. I know I mentioned this from time to time. There's another time.
Difference of improbability.
I'm sad the audience can't see Dan acting out this argument because he's being very convincing, and a lot of his argument is in his arm flailing.
Yeah,
arm
I'm totally motion. Buying it.
We got to take a break, and when we get back, we'll have more fun discussion
about
this penultimate episode, 300th night.
Penultimate.
Be right back.
Get out while you can.
You guys have to go.
Prepare for departure.
Wait, where are you going?
And we're back.
Please respond. Please respond. Mayday. Mayday. Can someone please respond?
Not right. Yes.
That was great. Yeah. I like that.
It was pretty creepy.
It was so like creepy.
Depressing, unsettling.
Yeah.
I know.
Return. Just calling out into space.
I know.
This comedic,
that was some intense, like early 80s, late 70s sci-fi kind of shit. Creepiness.
Tig Notaro is so fucking fantastic.
Yeah, she is really.
She's going to figure out what to do.
I like that they've given her a more front and center role in this show.
She holds it.
She's gold.
Handles it so well.
Yeah.
And I really like the positioning of her as a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She's a good teacher. Because it's like, she cares because she wants to teach them, but she also doesn't give a fuck. Like, she cares in a way that she doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
She somehow does both. I don't know how she does it. Because she wants to, you know, teach these kids, but she also doesn't give a shit about their bullshit.
How do I reach these kids? How do I teach these kids, or whatever.
It's going to say Glork from Botany.
Yes.
Glork.
Right.
Remember Glork from Botany?
Yeah. Or what was the other one? Biochem.
Like Steve from Biochem.
The first time I had to rewind it because when they were first
having
that fun little exchange.
Carl from Biochem.
She was mentioning that, you know, they're having that jokey, very cute jokey exchange before it got serious.
Mm.
And she said, from Biochem. At first, I thought she said from Band Camp. I was like, are they making an American Pie? American Pie joke?
One time at Band Camp.
Speaking of Tarima, she was looking at a pad. And those pads, I don't think this is a new thing. I think they've always been like this.
I don't think they've redesigned
the pads, but I must have just forgotten. But the pads, they don't have a rectangular screen. They have
not
some,
on this show.
They have a weird screen where it's like a rectangle
it's
with
an
two.
Oblong.
Wait a sec. I'm explaining.
Hold your horses, Jesse.
Please wait.
All right.
It's a rectangle screen, mm-hmm. except two of the corners are cut.
Mm-hmm.
on opposing sides. So it's like the lower left corner and the upper right corner are cut.
It's like a half Battlestar Galactica. Because the gimmick on Battlestar Galactica is the corners of the pages were all cut off.
Right. So why would they make a screen that isn't is with the corners cut? Well, like if you want to make your screen circular and be crazy, okay. But to make it a goofy ass shape that doesn't even have a name.
So,
like there's no name for that shape.
Right. It's like you might as well make it like a pentagon.
A pentagon would make even more sense.
Hexagon.
So you're saying that this is actually a new design
for this show? I don't know. Maybe it was on Discovery too, but it's
I'm just assuming
it's a 32nd century
because
thing.
This show
previous ones were always just rectangular.
Because this show does a lot of homages to old episodes. I just assume they grabbed it from an old design.
Some kind of,
so I could be wrong.
Wackazoid.
Fromage.
It's called a wackazoid.
But so it doesn't make sense why you'd cut off part of the fucking.
But there is a real world example that doesn't provide an answer, but is similar, right? So. BMW.
I knew it.
BMW.
I knew it.
Coming out with some refreshed car designs, particularly their electric vehicle line. And everyone says they're amazing. They're so great. But everyone's also slightly aggravated because they have a trapezoidal screen.
Why would they do that?
For no particular reason.
Why? Because you want to stand
trapezoid's
out.
Trapezoid's so stupid.
Right?
Stand out. Now, here's another example. To go, and this is why this is a good real world example, even though it provides no answers or frankly even context, but it makes sense with what you said, Dan, because Mini's electric cars have circular screens.
Right.
Because Mini is famous for having a big circular instrument cluster.
Circular is pretty stupid.
It's part of their design heritage.
Fucking crazy.
And a circular screen, as you said, Dan, look, you can argue that it's not as good as like a just standard old rectangular screen, but at least there's a symmetry there and you can make it work. Trapezoidal screen seems kind of crazy.
Yeah. Will you stop doing that?
And what you're describing is a little...
Might as well have a parallelogram.
A little wild.
Never do this again.
Or maybe I mean a parallelogram, actually.
A rhombus.
I mean like a rectangle that's been pushed. I apologize. I don't mean,
explain yourself.
I don't mean a trapezoid. In the BMW, it's like a rhombus or whatever. It's like the tilted.
Yeah, that's
know.
Even more fucked.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
What is wrong with you two? Yeah.
That's a good question.
Precisely. Who are you right now?
All
right.
So we should talk about Ukek.
Yeah, yeah. We will because Ukek is fucking awesome.
And Ishani, why did that? Why the Ishani?
Yes. Yes. Okay. You said Ishani, and then you wobbled about a bit, and then you said Ishani again, and you looked at me, and you kind of put your hand out in like an open like Ishani.
Ishani.
I'm not 100% sure how to interpret this
because what Caleb tried.
I already hit that frequency with fractal polymorphic, variable quantum algorithmic, even old classics like ECC, RSA, 10DES. Yeah.
That's
old classics.
RCA, FBI, CIA.
Well, the old classics, by old classics, he means stuff from like now times, which is like over 1,000 years old. But Ashani, that was the secret password he used. Did you notice that the secret cryptography key, because it was the crypto key that he had to put in there, had 7 boxes. So apparently the key had to be 7 characters long, or at most 7 characters, and Ashani is 7 characters long. There were only 7 boxes to enter a passcode
in. You're suggesting he's stupid.
Well, no, I'm not suggesting he's stupid. I'm questioning the security of such a system that outwardly limits by it's kind of like in Star. It's kind of like in Wrath of Khan. Remember when I was talking about how they had to enter the passcode, and instead of pressing buttons, they had flip switches. Yeah. Instead of pressing 1, 2, 3, 4 like buttons, they had switches. So you switch the 1 on and the 3 on, so you couldn't have multiple ones.
That's archaic as balls.
So you couldn't press 1 like 3 times because it was a switch. You could only have 1 once. You could only have 3 once because it was a switch and not a button.
Math was different in 1982, you know.
And so, but this is now 2000 and whatever, and I'm saying, Ishani, in order to enter the passcode, it's not just
200. Actually,
it.
I'm just avoiding the emails.
There are no fucking emails. You always say that, and they're not. There are no emails, Patrick. There are no emails.
Because I would, Dan.
Okay,
then I would argue there's no emails.
Look,
because I'm proactive.
Look, I'm just
staving off the emails.
Normally, when you enter a passcode, it's just an empty field, and you put in the number of characters as many as you wish. But this ahead of time designates that they are at most 7 characters,
It
just so happens that Ashani is 7 characters long. So they are unnecessarily limiting the security of their cryptography by saying, okay, you have 7 boxes.
Starfleet has a hilariously long history of terrible security.
Yeah.
People are always just walking on the bridge. Like, motherfuckers from the 1980s are just wandering onto the bridge, and Picard's all like, what are you doing?
That Odo Mamma Jamma, he didn't know what was going on.
You know, subspace is like, is like a Wild West. I bet there's all sorts of like horrible things transmitted.
Those pinchy aliens.
Do you, like through subspace messaging? I bet horrible stuff gets transmitted through subspace.
Oh, you mean just disgusting like dark net, dark internet, onion net type.
Well,
shit.
Well, think about it like
bad hologram programs.
But think of
snuffograms.
Think about it like. Anisha is like sending out these secret codes that only Caleb is supposed to be able to read. Yeah. So if she's doing that over subspace that only Caleb can read, you know there's a whole like network of horrible things going back and forth. Subspace is like the internet, basically, but it is like the dark net.
Never thought about that. Yeah. Since as we've established before, the Star Trek never had the internet.
Right.
Because in 2024 in Star Trek, instead of the internet, they had... consoles where you had to like log in and subscribe to your digital channel.
Subspace is not is more of like just the messaging aspect of the
it's the medium
but there you could apply a browser sort of interface to subspace, which is what the pad kind of does.
We do want to continue our conversation, but
do they have JavaScript? Do they have JavaScripts that they can put
on
that?
But I bet they still have. Like I bet they still have COBOL.
Do you think they can run scripts through subspace?
We need to do. Where the hell have
you
I heard
you
that
play,
before?
You think you can play Snake on subspace? You can subspace?
Do a lot of subspace.
You think you can play Snake on subspace?
I think you need like a tachyon.
Okay, so last
can you play Jumpman on subspace?
Last week's. Where the hell have I heard that before? Because we got a bunch of guesses this week. So I will play last week's Where the Hell Have I Heard That Before.
Together.
In brief again.
We drink Czech Kluk.
I play
from the same bowl.
I play a clip from somewhere in the Star Trek universe, and you, the audience, contact us to let us know what you think the clip is from, which show, which movie, which character. Give us as much information as you can, and whoever gives us the most, I guess, is the winner. I don't know. It's fun. You send us
silly
answers, real
sassy.
Answers, whatever. Fun
sassy.
Game. So last week,
I can say sassy.
Hold on. Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Fuck. Sassy. What makes you so sassy? What do you say, Senor Sassy?
Sassy.
Sassy. Sassy. Sassy. Sassy. If somebody says sassy. 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 So sassy. Sassy!
I'm freaking out.
I suspect some people may have trouble with that. Dan and I are...
Did somebody say sassy?
Dan and I are delighted. The rest of you motherfuckers are angry.
Look at that stupid kid!
All right. So I'm going to play last week's clip so you can all hear it, and then I'll go through... the guesses that were submitted. Okay.
Sassy!
This is what I played last week.
The accident, the 71 people who died. We were testing the cloaking device.
It was covered up.
The 9 of us who made it back alive were sworn to secrecy.
This is some kind of trick.
All right. Dan, Jesse, I always give you the opportunity.
Well, it's because last week it was Billy Riker, so this week it's like Sam Riker or something.
Do you think this is Sam Riker?
No, it's proper Riker. It's not.
Yeah,
it's like that ship he was on, and like
is this Riker from Enterprise or some weird Riker? Is it something
like
that?
No, it's regular old TNG Riker, and he's talking to Troy.
TNG. So Jesse.
Oh,
saying,
Troy. That's right. Was he talking to? I didn't even listen to the clip.
Like, sounded like Troy.
I wasn't even listening to the clip.
I don't remember the details, but there was some stuff, and
what
like he wasn't supposed
again?
To talk about, and like some his commanding officer comes to visit. Right.
Play the clip again.
I'm doing you a favor here, Dan. This goes against format, but I will play the clip for you one more time.
The accident, the 71 people who died. We were testing the cloaking device.
It was covered up.
Yeah, the 9 of us who made it back alive were sworn to secrecy.
Okay, it is TNG because Troy is a
Nightbird.
Nightbird.
Okay.
Nightbird.
So, you guys guessed the TNG, but you don't have any further guesses from there.
I forget.
The Nightbird.
The name.
We got a Facebook guess from Marie, or I should say we got a guess from Marie on Facebook. And
Nightbird.
She says...
Nightbird.
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 Bird.
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 She says, picking bird.
Bird.
Marie says, I think this is from the TNG episode, The Pegasus, where it is revealed that yes. Riker has worked on an illegal cloaking device. You guys are so funny and a highlight of my week. Thanks so much, Marie. So, thank you.
Thanks, Marie.
Thank you for,
thanks, Agamus,
for the kind comment, Marie.
Thanks.
I won't reveal whether you are correct yet or not because we do have some other guesses. Here is,
I don't get it.
Here is a guest sent to us from Isaac. And Isaac says, hi, Don, John, and Ron.
Hi.
It's your favorite jam eater here for a shot at what the hell? I've heard that before.
What kind of jam do you think that guy eats?
Probably Isaac, some Marmite jam.
Raspberry.
Isaac Vegemite jam.
Goes on to say, I think it's Riker in Pegasus. But you might have tricked me and played Riker in Enterprise. These are the Voyagers. But you knew I'd think that, so you probably picked Pegasus. I also have a lots of self-doubt because of this game, and it could equally be any other episode. I love you, Isaac.
What?
thank you. Thank you, Isaac.
Thanks, Agamus.
As always, everyone go check out Isaac's podcast, Trek 365.
Okay, let's do it.
And let's do it.
And finally, we have a guest from Amy. Amy's won this contest.
She's the leader, isn't she?
I think she's probably she got two. She was
two
for
two. She's in the Hall of Champions.
And Amy says, hi, guys. I was planning to sit this round out, but I don't want to disappoint Emmanuel.
You got to jump in there, Amy.
So here I am. This is a reference to last week, Emmanuel Croft.
Emmanuel Kant.
Emmanuel Kant is a real pissant who is very rarely stable. Emmanuel said that he wasn't going to submit this week because he was hoping to hear Amy give one of her classically super detailed responses. So this is Amy responding in kind. Amy says, this week's WTHHIHTB is from... Is that how long it goes on for? Is from Enterprise, Season 4, Episode 22, These Are the Voyages.
Oh, I was right! Motherfucker, I was right!
Yes.
Yeah, so you changed your answer at the end.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did. You said TNG at the end.
No, I didn't.
You didn't. He did not. He did not.
No,
backtrack.
I didn't.
No, he held true.
I never. I did say Troy. I might have changed.
You said TNG.
I knew it was a trick.
Dan holds firm.
I knew it was a trick.
Amy goes on to note that
I will ignore anything I said past Enterprise.
I like it. You're like, I will ignore.
This is SETI Alpha 5.
This is SETI Alpha 5.
This is SETI Alpha 5. She goes on to note that this sound clip happens at 24 minutes and 15 seconds. In that episode, yes, this is the episode of Enterprise, the series finale, the much maligned and controversial series finale. We covered it a while back, where the conceit is that Riker is, it's from that episode of TNG, The Pegasus, which was the episode they introduced this idea of the Federation cloaking device. But in this episode of Enterprise, it's Riker is using the holodeck to help him work through this problem. Now, that plot doesn't make any sense because
is SETI Alpha 5!
The stuff that they're going through on the Enterprise storyline really is not like analogous to what Riker is having to deal with. It's stupid. But anyway,
it's holograms?
So yes, it was a trick, Dan.
I knew it was a trick.
My problem,
my only regret is letting Jesse influence my decision. Not your fault, Jesse. I'm not blaming you. I'm blaming myself.
Let me continue.
I took the easy route.
Let me continue Amy's email. She says, in this infuriating final episode of the series, Riker visits Hollow Enterprise, hoping that it will help him decide whether to finally come clean about the Pegasus cover-up.
Holograms.
Not only do we get an "it was all just a holo program" episode, but we also never get to find out who Chef is, and instead get Riker in a chef uniform chatting up the rest of the Enterprise crew. Troy and Data also make little appearances and are extra annoying because Berman and Braga are trying to write cute, quippy dialogue for them, and to add insult to injury, at 27:50, Trip and Archer drink a toast to the next generation with a bottle with a bottle of whiskey gifted to Archer's dad by Zefram Cochrane.
Oh, God.
The only...
Zefram fucking cock.
The only saving grace of this annoying episode is the reappearance of the presumed dead Shran. This has less to do with the plot twist itself and more to do with the fact that I think Jeffrey Combs is sexy as an Andorian. Thanks so much, Emmanuel, for making me relive this tragedy of a series finale. Amy, all right. Thank you, Amy. Great
Hell
job.
Yeah.
Thanks, Sagamus. Thanks, Sagamus.
It was indeed.
Thanks, Sagamus.
These are the voyages from Enterprise. Okay, so let me play next week's sound. I will play it twice.
I am floored.
I will play the next week's sound twice and send in your guesses to feedback@itsgotstartrek.com or DM us on social media at It's Got Star Trek in all the regular places. Okay, so here is the sound clip.
There. Now you look like Starfleet material.
Ooh, who is that? All right, I'm going to play it one more time. There you go.
There. Now you look like Starfleet material.
Okay. Send in your guesses.
I think I actually know what this is.
Dan always thinks he knows what he is.
I think I know what
and
it is.
And he frequently does.
Well, he knows stuff.
I know what this is.
Okay. All right. That's it for this week's Where the Hell Have I Heard That Before? And we look forward to hearing your guesses. And, again, a reminder, I like picking these out, but if you want to send in some time codes or send in an audio clip, we'd love to have people in the audience pick some of these clips to have us play to our friendly folks
and
out there.
And speaking of audio clips...
Mm-hmm. Oh, Dan, do you have any audio clips this week?
Well, there were some UKEK-related audio clips. So we had
a
classic...
I was a fan of UKEK.
We had a classic sort of Star Trek's Shady Planet. Yeah. I bet you the food there is actually pretty good.
That
street food, yeah. I bet they have good food there.
It looked like good,
even
not,
though,
good restaurant.
Even though it's like a shady shit planet with like ne'er-do-wells and horrible people, I bet the food is good.
That's where you have good food.
And I want to know that room they were in.
The room or the rune?
Room.
The rune.
There was no rune.
No, I don't recall a rune.
Why would you assume I said rune when there was no rune?
I wasn't assuming. I was asking.
Why would you assume that I could possibly have referenced a rune when there was no rune?
He's an instigator.
I was puzzled. Yeah. I just want to make sure.
I think Jesse's right. You're an instigator.
She may be.
Yeah.
Anyway,
stop doing that?
The room they were in, I don't know. Maybe that's just like a little like a hotel, a little business services room with his mom.
Where they were all talking with each other with Anisha and Caleb and the cadets, and they were all talking back and forth.
Right.
Like it would look like some kind of storage room or something.
Some kind of workshop.
But that I know it's like some. I know the answer is an easy throwaway. Just like, oh, it's just one. It's just general purpose kind of room.
It looks like a regular kind of Star Trek room.
That's what I'm saying though, is I want to know specifically what is the purpose of this random ass room in the middle of this place. Because it seemed like a storage room, and if it's a storage room, it's going to have some kind of lock, maintenance lock on it.
Right.
Maybe it's her room. Maybe she rents it out or something.
It was like a shitty promenade.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's like, what is it? Why do they have that room there? What's
exactly,
it for?
Right.
And why does everyone have access to it? And why were they not scared that other people might not just come wandering in?
These are the things that Dan thinks about while he's staring at the ceiling in the middle of the night.
And when they were like, oh, you have Starfleet tech? When they had the, when she had that transact, not the monoaxial, whatever, was it the transaxial? Yeah. She, it was...
The little massagey thing?
Transaxial.
The little massage thing?
Anisha only had a monoaxillating relay, but Sam needed a transaxillating relay, and she used... She used programmable matter. Can I finish? She used programmable matter to make that. Now, later on, it was interesting because it was Braca's people that were like grilling them and causing problems and all that stuff, which is interesting because Anisha interfered, but Braca is the one that got Anisha out of jail, which made me think at first Anisha was going to be shady, but that was just a red herring or something, or maybe just a quick throwaway explanation. But I thought it was interesting that Braca got her out of jail. She escapes from Braca, and now she's trying to save people from Braca. And so, but they were asking her, they were looking at Sam's transaxillating relay, and they were like, what are you doing with Starfleet tech? Mm-hmm. And I think that was the wrong question, because it's not what she was doing with Starfleet tech. It's what she was doing with programmable matter. That's what they should be asking.
Do you think they know, once the programmable matter has set into the thing?
Well, see, that's a good
point. I don't know.
No, see, that's a good point. And so, but I think the premise of the question is wrong, because in a future with programmable matter, you cannot assume that anything is Starfleet tech or Romulan tech or Vin Venari Rahl tech, or
well, maybe that's a bit of
what do they call the Vulcans
now? Disconnect.
What do they call them?
Navar
tech. Like that's Navar the thing. And when you have programmable matter, you can't assume tech is from one place or another.
I think that's true. Although I'm happy to assume that a joint like this place, maybe programmable matter is like hard to get.
Well, they
maybe it's like a high end.
And apparently, she only had a few mags of it.
Yeah.
You know, that she was.
It's only just a couple of mags.
I thought it was interesting the way you like shape. You have to be kind of a sculptor to like shape the programmable
that
matter.
Was neat.
It was kind of crazy how that
and
works.
And the Caleb kid, like this guy's got like the he's got some skills.
It's just weird because for a device that's not even arguably that is the internals are more important than the externals. That shaping it externally is going to help the internals somehow.
Right.
It's weird. I don't get it, but it's fine. It's neat. It's still neat. But the sounds we're going to play. So they were on Ukek. So here are all the Ukek.
This is not a list, but this is a collection.
A collection of Ukek sounds. So we got.
I love the
Ukek.
These were Ukeks.
Ukek.
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 Ukek. Ukek.
Sam says a little different.
Ukek.
Ukek.
She says Ukeg.
Remember in high school, there was that brief period of time where certain, like, kind of shitty people would pronounce the word cock, cack.
Yeah.
And they were like all like cack. And they thought it was funny. They would say cack and they'd laugh.
And they'd laugh. And I'd be like,
who are you right now?
So.
Ukek.
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 Ukek. And then there's.
Uke. Uke.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been in Uke?
Okay.
That and so they all say
local
different
dialect.
There's different dialects with Ukek. And I'm going to play a sound clip that one might call mono, but I would argue it's not mono.
Okay.
It's center channel, which is not mono. It's center channel. Because it takes dialogue.
Does that mean it's not going to play if somebody's listening in stereo and does not have a 5.1 or 7.1 setup,
they just won't hear it?
Is that what you're trying to tell people?
No, that's very funny. That's clever of you. You're clever.
By the way, I know that Dan's the only person in the world that thought that was funny. Probably very few people in our audience, but Dan, I very much appreciate it. You got to understand, Dan is a joyful person. He likes to be...
joyful person.
Dan, you and I are similar. We like to be amused. We're often amused, but it's harder to get a laugh, especially out of Dan. When Dan gives a proper laugh, that's really, it's really special.
Oh, how great.
I like when Dan makes a joke and then gives a sincere laugh to his own joke.
Yeah.
Sometimes that would be annoying by other people, but with Dan, it's like kind of sweet.
Yeah.
It's
charming. Yeah. So the reason I mentioned this is center channel, because normally this dialogue is obscured in the episode, but you would get to hear it better. And this I call this violent background interaction. And this is on Ukek when they first arrived at Ukek. Ukek.
Uka.
Kola.
Show me what's in your bag!
I don't have anything, really, I don't!
And you won't mind showing!
Please!
You need to pay up!
I need more time, please!
Your time is our money!
Oh,
that was really violent.
It was very violent.
And it's like, and when you hear it in the episode, you can tell that something violent's going on. But when you single it out, to me, it feels a lot, it's like more upsetting, actually.
Yeah.
Because like, this person is getting knocked around.
It's very upsetting for anything we've heard in Star Trek, generally.
I
appreciate you pulling that out, because while I caught bits and pieces, or quote-unquote snatches of that conversation, I didn't catch all of it. I just sort of inferred what it was about. But yeah, I really thought that the Ukek business was really nicely produced. The production design, I think, is one of the better Star Trek creepy places. It's kind of like a Deep Space Nine, kind of Honor Among Thieves type vibe, except with a much higher production value, because there's all these people milling about and all sorts of aliens.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's just funny when you see like a Vulcan in some like shady place doing some shady shit.
Well, I will say you can cut that out later if the audio doesn't come through.
Cut it out.
And you can cut what I'm saying out right now too, and I won't get mad.
I think the audio will come through just fine.
I'm sure it will.
Sure it will. So Caleb did the whole thing where you know in the movie with the kid and the wolf, and the kid wants to save the wolf, but the wolf wants to follow the kid, but the kid knows if the wolf follows him, the wolf will get killed. So the only way to get the wolf to leave and to be safe is to make the wolf think that the kid hates him.
Yeah. I called it the Harry and the Hendersons maneuver.
Right. When he's like, "Get out of here, we don't like you anyway."
Throw rocks at Harry.
Yeah. And they're all sad, but it's even heartbreaking because they're like, Why are you throwing rocks at me? I thought we were friends. And it makes it seem like they're not friends, but the reason they're throwing rocks is because they love him and don't want
to
get hurt.
Them, yeah.
What, he totally did that.
He kind of did.
What are you talking about with a wolf? What is that?
It was some movie.
a movie that is apparently less popular than...
It may have been like White Fang.
Harry and the Hendersons. Ah,
but he kind of sort of did that a little bit, but not really. But at that point when he was like shitting all over Genesis and then Darum. When he was like, "Genesis, you're not going to be like your dad." And he's like, "Darum, you're a clown prince." And then he was about to deliver it to Sam, and Sam fucking disarmed his ass.
Oh, yeah. She knew he was full of shit.
She hugged him. And she disarmed him by hugging him.
By the way, because we got to finish soon, but I really wanted to make sure to make this point that Sandro Rasta in this episode, multiple times, including when Sam hugs him, but most when he's like dealing with his mom, and also at the beginning of this Harry and the Henderson scene, kind of. He is this giant monstrous man, and he can do this thing with his face that makes him look like a scared 6-year-old boy.
Yeah, he does.
There's a few times in this episode where it's almost upsetting to look at his face because he's so. I think there's a thing with Tarima. There's a thing with his mom.
Well, there's a few points
where he looks like a shrunken, tiny little boy who is terrified.
And Sam, in that Sam scene, he does it. Now he doesn't quite. There's a scene with him and another scene with him and Sam when Sam like. Gives him the message saying, like, if I don't come along, like, you're going to turn into space salsa. And she gives that long line space about, salsa. Like, I'm going to blip out of here and your ass is going to catch on fire and all that stuff. He gives another face that's not quite the same face, but he gives this thoughtful face. You see his jaw muscle tense up. He's, like, thinking about it. He's like, okay, you can come. Like, in that scene right there, there's a close-up of his face. So he has some good facial expressions. Brilliant. You know, I'm all about the facial expressions.
Because he's really huge.
Janeway being the leader of facial expressions, I think, in Star Trek.
Like, he's walking around that planet, and a lot of people are just like, oh, I'm not going to fuck.
Like, he covers his face, and he's like, maybe people won't notice me if I just cover my face up a little bit.
I feel like there was a scene when he was standing next to Ake where they must have, like, put him on a pedestal or something, because she looked like literally half his fucking size.
Holly Hunter's small, and he's super tall.
Small and tall.
Makes it sort of fun. A couple other things to mention. Did you see that? Like, when Tatiana Maslany, right before he catches up with her, we see all the subtitles, because she's talking to the
bulky guy. There were huge subtitles.
There were huge subtitles, which is awesome, because it was, like, in, like, Star Trek 5. They were, like, Star Trek 5 style subtitles. But also, she's at one point, she's all like, it's rare Bama tech.
Yeah, that's right.
I was like, Bama. Who was Bama tech?
Wow.
That's
a Bama tech. Is she from D.C.?
Yeah, I was like, I don't know what the slang, like, that slang is, that's like a, like, Washington D.C. slang, so it might not be.
You
want to
give me that
else.
Bama tech? You must be lunching.
That's why the Vulcan was like, I don't know this fucking Bama tech. Jesus,
it's Bobo.
Why was she like when she went to Caleb before she knew he was Caleb? She was like, "You want to die?" Like, I guess she must have detected he was following her.
Yeah, it was because he was following her all clumsily because he was all like, "Durr, mommy, where my mommy?
Sorry, my mommy."
I apologize. He did a good job.
Also, it says that at the end, Ake said that she was like, "Oh, Braca lured us out into a defensive position." But isn't if Braca lured them in a defensive position, the only reason she was out there was because Caleb escaped to see his mom.
She wasn't referring to her the Athena. She was referring to the rest of Starfleet. She was saying that he set off that one particle of Omega to be like, get Starfleet to shit its pants. And so Starfleet was like, everyone's freaking out, so we're going to pull all our ships in to protect the planets. And because all the ships were in, there were no ships outside of the Federation.
So in a way, they're lucky, I guess, that Caleb ran off.
100%. Yeah. This is something that's happened multiple times in Star Trek that only by somebody breaking the rules did they save the day.
It's pure Starfleet.
I know we got to end soon, but there's a 30 seconds to collapse moment.
Was it 30 seconds?
So at 51 minutes and 31 seconds, the computer says 30 seconds. The computer says 31 seconds to collapse. At 51:55, which is 24 seconds later, there should be 6 seconds left. They say in 5 seconds. So I will accept that.
It's close.
At 52:02, which is 7 seconds after that, which is 31 seconds after, they hit 1 second left. And 52:03... the saucer cuts.
Right.
And so so 32, it was around 32 seconds, 32, 33.
What percentage of that is of the stated, you know, the stated versus the observed?
I had a feeling that you would comment on this.
Dan's
going to
figure
aspect.
Dan's going to figure out the exact percentage, cuz we're going to start tracking this, okay? We want to know the percentage. This seems like a pretty good one. That seems pretty close.
It's from what I have marked, it seems. So it went 2 seconds over, so yeah. I mean 2 divided by 30 is 6.667, you know.
Percent.
Right. Okay. Repeating, of course.
All right.
6.66. Repeating, of course. That was from the Warcraft dude. Yeah.
I do think, I don't know 100%. I have to listen to it a little bit more.
It was 6.67 seconds. 6.6% longer.
I think on Ukek there was
close enough.
There was a voice announcing, telling everybody, you have an hour to leave. Anybody who wants to leave, you have to leave within an hour. I'm pretty sure that was Jonathan Frakes himself.
Ah.
Like when I listened to it, I listened to it a bunch of times, and it was hard to hear, but it really sounded like Jonathan Frakes. I might have to do Dan's trick about, you know, center channeling it, because I didn't try that yet.
There was a Lorien Morn sighting in this episode, which was cool. Also, at one point, Aki says she wants them to pull a Kumau. I don't remember what Q apostrophe M-A-U.
I didn't know what that was.
When does she say that?
She says
when they have to get close to the planet.
She goes,
they do the Battlestar Galactica.
She goes, we can't transport at this range. Fine, alter course. Let's pull a Kamau. And then Reno says that will be bumpy.
I didn't catch that. I have to look that up. I just referred to it as the Battlestar Galactica maneuver because that was something I thought it was really nicely done here. The Athena kind of looked like an angel coming down to save the day with the bright lights and stuff. But it still doesn't beat the scene in Battlestar Galactica when they use that same maneuver to help out some folks.
I like that Anisha was all shaded out by his friends and she like wanted to check their fingernails. But in the end, like, she still saved them, even though she was like she seemed like she was going to be shady at first, but
she trusted her son.
Yeah, so it was cool. I'm glad they went that route.
And of course, the conflict that set up right at the end of the episode between her and Ake, where this is why you have Tatiana Maslany in this part, because you need somebody who can be able to act against and with both Holly Hunter and in the next episode, with Nustafer Braca, Paul Giamatti. Such a wonderful job. So impactful at the end of this episode. There's so much stuff that Tatiana Maslany does just with her eyeballs that is like crazy. And then in the future, you know, the current day version, she does this little pouty thing with her mouth. Did you notice where she kind of, it makes her look like super angry, where her like upper lip is like a little, I don't know how to describe it. Just check it out. She's doing something there that's making her look a little extra. Ugh. But anyway, that's
Nustafer.
You know what's interesting?
Nustafer.
I spelled it Nustopher. I have one other sound that comes up.
Can you stop the tractor beam from here?
That's a fast talking Burnham.
That's fast talking Burnham because it's can you stop the tractor beam, which is Canustopthe.
Yeah.
And I wrote Nust, so that's almost Nustafer. It's almost Nustafer.
Almost.
Anyways, that's an order.
Yeah, let's do that's an order. And real quick, did you happen to grab a clip of Darum saying, "We lack lots of enzymes"? That was another funny line. Because they're all like, "I thought you liked the enzyme to digest bananas." And
he was saying
like,
some funny stuff when he was all drunk.
Yeah, because he was like, "We lack the enzyme to digest alcohol." And they're like, you know, and he's like, "We lack lots of enzymes.
We lack a lot of enzymes."
Excellent.
We lack a lot of enzymes.
Okay, I love this actor.
Judgy Genesis.
Did he say something about like?
I can't believe I forgot they're not called Vulcan anymore.
Kidnapping Genesis or something.
Yeah, because Genesis, like, he was like, because he felt they were leaving, and he's all drunk. He's like, "Are we kidnapping?
Are we kidnapping?"
I love that whole scene. I thought it was really, it was classic. It was funny. It was charming. Yeah. It made sense for each of the characters where they are in their little character journey. And then to top it off, they didn't have to do this. There was no reason they had to do this, but they added in like a totally fun little shuttle launch thing where they're all like, "Okay, oh no," and the shuttles are like, "Whoa!" And it just it looked fun, and it reminded me, because I've been watching a lot of like season one TNG, and it reminded me of like TNG used to do shit like that, where just because it was new, they'd be like, "Let's watch them launch the shuttlecraft. Let's fucking jizz all over the fucking holodeck because we can't believe they can make a park with a stream in it." Anyway,
or they converted power from the life support, and they got upset, and she was like, "Well, you're young and healthy. Don't worry about it."
Yeah, that's right.
Was this the episode? Did we see him coming out of the... it was very convenient there were transwarp tunnels that...
Yes.
Because it saved them... what she said is like, it'll save us 30 hours. Yeah. It'll take us 15 minutes. Yeah. So their trip was 30 hours and 15 minutes. And luckily there was a transwarp tunnel that got them there 30 hours away. Anyway.
Yeah.
But we saw them come out of the transwarp tunnel, right?
And it was all... because transwarp is always all floppy and ridiculous.
So it kind of... that was kind of like a Star Wars-y kind of... if I'm remembering
transwarp was always...
it's like hyperspace.
Of course it's mentioned but in Star Trek 3, but it was... Voyager really did a lot of transwarp.
If I'm thinking of the right episode, when it came out, it looked like kind of... it had a Star Wars-y vibe to it, the way it was flying out. Unless I'm thinking of another episode.
No, I think you're right. It's,
I'll buy it.
All right, any other last bits and bobs? We've got to figure out, how are they going to get out of this predicament? It's a real cliffhanger sort of thing. Next week, we're going to discuss...
Wait, I was going to do That's an Order.
Oh, shit!
You fucker.
All right, That's an Order?
Yes.
I forgot. I really want to... I want to hear that.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Choder.
Okay.
That's a choder. Okay.
Bamatech.
Okay.
Bamatech. I'm going to start a company called Bamatech. I'm going to make 286 computers exclusively.
Okay. Kake goes, "All stop. Cut the saucer." And Reno goes, "You want me to release the atrium? Well.
Jesse, I think some... it's not color commentary. It's color groaning.
Yes. Reina Greeno goes, "You want me to release the atrium? We'll lose the nacelles too." And Nala says, "Everyone on board's here with us. Cut the saucer. That's an order, Commander. Do it now." I mean, it's I'm neutral.
You're neutral.
It's very... for all the months we've gone without "That's an Order," I mean, I think they could have said it differently.
It's technically "That's an
the
Order."
The reason I'm neutral is because she didn't make a big point of saying it. She wasn't like, ring it, you know? She was just kind of like, "That's an order."
This instance of it seems somewhat superfluous.
She's
because...
pretty chill.
It's unnecessary.
Unnecessary in the sense that one doesn't imagine in this scenario that Jet Reno is going to really push back.
Right, yeah.
Jesus, fuck.
Today, Junior.
What is wrong with you two?
Jet Reno asks the question, like, are you sure? And Ake provides a very reasonable explanation as to what her thinking is. And so there's no reason to think that Reno needed the...
right. So I take that back. I'm not neutral. I think it's a bad... right. I think it was unnecessary.
I'm glad I turned you around.
Yeah, you changed my mind. It's just...
superfluous.
She wasn't as... She didn't punctuate it as much as they usually do. Usually they make a big show of it. And they're like, "That's an order." Roar! And this was kind of like calm, but like she didn't need to put that in there.
Okay. Next week is the season finale.
But she did say do it now.
Season finale, and it is titled RubinCon.
RubinCon.
And it's funny because for the longest time, everyone had it listed as Rubicon, and people were like annoyed and upset because there's an episode of Discovery called Rubicon, and Star Trek very rarely, if ever, duplicates names. And as it turns out, it's not Rubicon. It is indeed RubinCon.
So Chief O'Brien!
That is the season finale. And then for newer listeners...
extend long range scans to maximum 360 degrees. Oh.
That's a design flaw.
When
we are not covering new Star Trek, we bounce
around.
Well,
that's a design flaw.
We continue to provide you content. We bounce around the whole Star Trek universe doing episodes from all over the place and movies and stuff. So
sassy!
The point is, keep listening.
That's pretty sassy.
After next week. Okay. I think that does it for us, right? You can find us social media at It's Got Star Trek.
Any Shamir.
Website, www.itscottstartrek.com.
It'll take about 14 hours.
Patreon.com/itscottstartrek if you're interested in giving us money. And
give us money.
YouTube and all that. If you can, if you don't mind, subscribe to us on YouTube. You don't have to listen to us on YouTube, but it's really helpful if you can subscribe to us on YouTube. We
I really hope you find...
enjoy that. Just search for It's Got Star Trek. All right. I think that's enough. We'll talk to you next week. Oh, wait. I'm waiting for
and happiness.
Yeah, I had to wait till the end of the clip. It's still going.
It finally stopped.
What did he say at the end?
And happiness.
Okay.
Happiness is so hard to find. You remember what the movie that's from?
What movie that's from?
Happiness is so hard to find.
No, which movie is that from?
It's one of the two Addams Family movies.
Oh, okay. But I'm a fan of both.
I saw neither.
Because she's saying happiness is so hard to find, but the way she says it, she says happiness.
Who says that?
Addams Family and Addams Family Values.
It's
excellent film.
It's one of the outer characters. I think it's one of the antagonists.
Barry Sonnenfeld, if I remember.
And I think Gomez Addams is like, what did you just
Raul
say?
Raul Julia.
Who played M. Bison? His last role was M. Bison in the Street Fighter movie. He took that role because his kid liked Street Fighter.
Yeah, and then he died of cancer.
There's going to be a new Street Fighter movie. Cody Rhodes is playing Guile.
Does he have cancer?
Cancer.
How do you want me to answer that?
Answer,
because that couldn't
cancer.
Have been a real question. That's not a real question.
He really said it.
Structured as a real question.
He really
yeah, but
said
it's not
it.
A real question.
That's... Dan doesn't want to answer on the podcast. I'll find
no,
out.
No, that's not a real question. Just because it's
over.
Structured, you know what the jokes and sarcasm is. Something can be structured as a question, but meant as something else. I do not need to explain this to you. Okay. You just as you do not need to make up some fake argument to say something you didn't intend to say.
It could be a disingenuous argument and still be valid.
Yes, but why would you do such a thing?
Dan's pretending he doesn't know
for
me
comedy.
Oh, that doesn't excuse anything.
Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
All right. See you turkeys in the brig.
Everybody good? Mm-hmm.
Great. Glitter vomit. We'll sober up now.
It is all over my trousers.
Gross.